One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
Welcome to the NBA Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show.
Ding, ding!
How about we can just watch basketball?
I like that idea.
Welcome to the Daily Ding here on the Athletic NBA Show. Live from Philadelphia, I'm Jared Weiss. And live from LA, it's Mo DeKeel, who just watched the Lakers get absolutely trounced.
Yeah, that was rough.
That was really bad. Daniel Lehman's our producer. We're going to get into this Lakers-Warriors game. We're going to look ahead to Friday night's games. We're going to talk about a pretty monumental coaching change in the NBA. But first, Klay Thompson just eviscerated the Lakers.
I mean, Klay was unbelievable. 8 of 11. I don't feel like any of his shots, even his misses, didn't feel like they hit the rim. It was just the way he was making everything. He was on a roll. The fadeaway to the corner that he hit was unbelievable. I think it was in the first quarter. And it caught it, didn't bring the ball down, fading away, and drills that one. Was just beautiful. He was on a roll. And, you know, Steph Curry with just a quiet 20 and 12 night. Like, just really sort of killing those guys. I mean, this Warriors team, when they're rolling like that, that's a real tough team.
And the difference between, it's just like in the Celtics-Sixers series, like seeing how tight that first game was and then just the absolute obliteration by the home team responding in the second game. And the funny thing, it was like Steph went 3 for 5 from deep. He didn't have to do a ton in this game shooting the ball, but the threes he hit were like absolutely ridiculous, especially that last one there.
The last one shouldn't have counted. That was too mean. No, that was disrespectful. We're
cruel and unusual.
Blowing the whistle, disallow it. That was just too cruel in that sense. But I just think the big thing in this game that was different from game one, that the Warriors, the biggest adjustment was, hey, let's run a whole lot more Steph Curry pick and roll. And the Lakers were trying to be aggressive with Steph on it, which then opens up Draymond Green in the short roll. And that allowed him to find guys like Klay for shots. But the other guy who actually had a big night for them, who started in the place of Kevon Looney, was Jamichael Green. Who I was like, this is, when I heard the news, I was out of my mind because I'm a Looney fanatic. But like he really produced for them off the bench. 6 of 9 from the field, 3 of 6 from three, hit some big shots for them early to kind of keep that thing going.
Yeah. Jamichael Green shot 6 for 9 from the field in 12 and a half minutes. That is incredibly on brand for Jamichael Green. I feel like every time they call on him, he just like starts catching fire from the corners.
I'm not going to say every time. He's the thing I say about Jamichael Green is the idea of Jamichael Green is always better than the reality. Tonight, we got what the dream looks like. Let's see if he can do it again in game three.
Yeah. Also, Kevon Looney, only 12 minutes, still 8 rebounds. His rebound per minute rate is insane to the point that we have to refer to it as a rebound per minute rate. But he was 6, so he didn't start in this game. And Draymond had 9 assists. I mean, this was just like the Draymond Steph playmaking-a-thon.
I mean, 1 assist away from a triple-double, 11, 11, and 9. I think, again, it just goes back to the way the Lakers were playing Curry in the pick and roll, being aggressive. They were icing it. They were aggressively hedging double at times. And each time Curry would make that pass to Draymond, and Draymond would cook out of that. And I think that was a big part of what we saw in their offense and what was the big difference in their offense versus game one, when a lot of it was off-ball stuff for Curry that allowed the Lakers to sit and top lock and really kind of be aggressive and force him away from the screens and into the paint. And I think that was the big difference in this game. And you just can't really ignore that.
Okay, so other side, Anthony Davis just has not been able to consistently establish himself in this playoff run. Why do you think we're just seeing such massive up and down swings with him?
Yeah, I don't know if it's stamina. I don't know if he can do this every other night. And whatnot. I think what's frustrating about it, and this is what frustrates me about this. All right, LeBron James, 18 shots. Well, it's LeBron James. Led the Lakers with 18 shots? Probably should. He's pretty damn good. D'Angelo Russell with 12 shots. Rui Hachimura with 14 shots off the bench in 22 minutes. Austin Reeves, 11 shots. Anthony Davis with 11 shots. AD needs to be in the 18-19 range. He can't be the fourth or fifth Laker in field goal attempts. He needs to be up there with LeBron in terms of that. And I think some of that has to do with they have to do a better job of giving him opportunities on the move, finding him in those spots. I felt like he drifted a lot to the perimeter and things like that. Some of the jumpers he had at the paint at the free throw line didn't fall, but I didn't feel there was a real aggression from him tonight.
Second chance, pick and roll, dunker spot. Those are all places where he picks up a lot of those attempts, and he's just not getting those in the series. He's not getting those consistently.
One offensive rebound this game.
It's terrible. Well, okay, Warriors. Yes, I guess, how do you feel about these series where it's like close, underdog, road win to open up the series, then home team just destroys them in the second game? Is it just like kind of a reset when you switch locations? I mean, they're going down the PCH now. Is this back to even, or are the Warriors having a massive momentum swing here?
First, I want to applaud you with the PCH. Good job there. Good freeway referencing in highways.
My life.
Yeah. Good references and all of that stuff. I think this is a difficult series for the Lakers. I said it from the beginning. I just felt like they had no way to guard Steph in this situation. You know, like, what are they going to do next game? Go to drop and let Steph cook for 50? They're going to lose that game if that's what happens. I think it's a very difficult matchup for them, for their guards. I don't think they can really kind of navigate screens well. They're going to struggle a little bit against them. I think the Warriors kind of, this is the game plan. This is the offensive game plan they have to go to if they're going to win this series. It's just a crap ton of pick and rolls, Jared.
My favorite sentence in the English language, a crap ton of pick and rolls.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son Evan continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Speaking of, Philadelphia 76ers, James Harden, Joel Embiid, they tried running a crap ton of pick and rolls, did not work out for them in game two. Both guys were just out of sync. Now the Celtics head back to Philadelphia. They're tied 1-1. I just got to Philly today there to cover that for The Athletic. But I want to hear your take on this first. Did the Celtics, the way that they flipped the series dramatically with an absolute devastation, same thing where just like the third quarter just completely ripped the game open in game two, did the Celtics look like they're firmly in control here? Or do you see Philadelphia kind of like getting slapped back to reality, and now they're going to be kind of, Harden's going to lock back in, Tyrese Maxey's going to find his way, and Joel is going to hopefully be able to run up and down the floor?
This series really just depends on how much do the Celtics really want to do it on a night-to-night basis. Like, I'm serious. I'm sorry.
That's every single game for the Celtics, really.
I mean, that's just what I look at with this team. You know, Joe Mazzulla with this snide comment at the end of his press conference where nobody wants to ask about adjustments. You know what adjustment he made, Jared? You know what the biggest adjustment he made? Shoot
they
better.
Tried hard.
No, yeah, shoot better. Because that's all it was. They just shot better from three, and the Sixers didn't. And that was his big adjustment. And I, you know, go listen to Nerder, She Wrote. I definitely made my thoughts known on that stuff. But I just think the ultimate thing for them is if the Celtics play proper basketball and really work on offense and don't get stuck and bogged down into one-on-one isolation stuff and really try to attack the paint and kick out and spray from there, I don't think there's a way the Sixers can beat them. And that's with Embiid, who MVP. I think game three is going to be fascinating because he's going to get the trophy in front of the crowd. We know the Sixer fan base is going to go nuts for him. And the adrenaline in there, I think, honestly, I think the first quarter, if I was a betting man, I would bet Sixers first quarter, whatever the number is going to be on that, just because the adrenaline, I think, is going to carry them. The Celtics need to chill out, weather that storm, and then get back to playing basketball because I think they're the better team. I think they have the most talent. I think there's no reason for this. I don't think this is something Philly can really hang with. And I think this is going to be one of those. It's going to be a situation, but it's all on the Celtics because we've seen it too many times. Saw it in the Hawks series. Saw it in game one. You got to be better than that.
Really interesting. I think part of this is how much help the Celtics can send over on Harden and Embiid. they were able to get pretty aggressive, like in their pick and roll coverages, because they could just help off of PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker's taking one shot. And it just seems like there's this black hole in the corner for Philly. And if that's the case, one, do you play PJ Tucker if you're not going to have him shoot the ball, even though you obviously need him for defense on Jason Tatum? But two, it's like, what's more important, I guess, for the Sixers? Like, do they need to win a shootout here, or do they want to slow it down, which has been their identity most of the season? But obviously we saw how playing with speed and aggression and ball pressure was what worked for them so well in game one.
Well, when they have Joel Embiid out there, they're a slowdown team. I don't think you can take PJ Tucker off the court. And I think just what he does for you defensively, when he does crash the glass offensively, good things happen. I think they just need to get him to be more aggressive and be more willing to shoot those shots in the corner when they come to him. And I think that's just got to be, hey, we need that, because they need him on the defensive end. I don't think they can really replicate what he does on the defensive end with other guys like McDaniels and so on. I don't think they can do what PJ Tucker does.
All right, let's head over to Denver versus Phoenix. They're going back to Phoenix now. Denver won those first two games. They seem to be in pretty firm control of the series, even with Jamal Murray not even shooting as well as he could. But Jokic just, like, at a time where Joel was out, like, Jokic reminded everybody why he won those last two MVPs.
Yeah, no, I mean, Jokic is pretty incredible. I felt like here's the thing for game two, just my thought about that one was the game plan worked for Phoenix until Chris Paul went down. We're going to let Jokic cook our guys and score 50 points or whatever, and we're going to stop everybody else. They were hanging in. They were doing a pretty good job. CP goes down, their offense falls apart. And then because CP goes down, it's now just so much easier to defend the Phoenix Suns. And, like, I don't see a way for them. I find it very hard for them to score offensively because, listen, if I'm Denver, I'm just looking at the lineups and who they're going to be playing on the floor and just saying to the team, hey, guys, we have five guys on the court. I'm only afraid of two guys on the Phoenix Suns. I'm fine if we play 5-on-2 and just let the other three guys try to score, because I don't think they'll make enough. And I think that's kind of the strategy. It's just not enough bodies. Not enough bodies for the Suns. I mean, Josh Okogie had a wide open look in the middle of the lane. And I'm telling you, Jared, you could just feel it. He just got so tight when he got the look. Kicks it out to KD. KD drills, misses a shot, but it's just too much work for KD and Devin Booker.
Yeah, DeAndre Ayton, is he going to prove that he's a star, or are we going to have to, like, walk away from this? Because Jokic just made him look feeble, and it was frustrating watching some of these. Go ahead. It's just frustrating, man.
No, it's that's the game plan. Hey, DeAndre, like, I love you. Not me personally. If I'm Monty, this is what I'm saying to him. Not me. I've been known to be a DeAndre hater. Go listen to Basket Buds. But hey, like, do your best. He's a 2-time MVP, so we're not going to be mad at you if he cooks you. But just be aggressive on the offensive end. And he's just simply not. They have no way of getting Jokic into actual foul trouble because DeAndre Ayton prefers to fade away than go towards the basket. And I think that's one of the issues there for them, is they can't really hurt them that much defensively.
Coach Motsi in the house. Okay, we got to talk about
that. Was bad. No, that was bad, Jared. Oh,
leave that in. Leave it in, Danielle. Wow. Okay, last thing we have to get to here. Coach Bud.
Doing this under protest the rest of the way.
Speaking of being under protest, Coach Bud, he's out. And the Bucks need a new coach. And we just saw Ime Udoka just took the Houston job. So the big name on the market is off the board. Where do they go from here? Charles Lee has been a big candidate for a lot of these other jobs. Do you see Charles Lee scooching up the bench, or do you think they could be going external?
This is a tough one. I could see it being a situation of Charles Lee moving up the bench. I don't know what options are out there. You know, like, who's out there that you're looking at? First off, the recycle coach pool. Nobody out there really excites me. Like, this is one of those things where I wonder if Quinn Snyder kind of looking at himself like, man, maybe I shouldn't have taken this Hawks job so early. Or even Ime Udoka going, maybe I shouldn't have jumped on this Rockets job so quickly. I know Nick Nurse is out there. I'm not a Nick Nurse man. I'm not a big fan of his. More importantly, I think this is a team. They kind of have their defensive identity, and that's where Nick Nurse comes in. They need a coach to give them an offensive identity, in particular in the half court. That's where they struggled mostly over these past few years. Their half court offense has been very blah. And I think they need to look for somebody who's going to have fresh ideas for that. whether that's Charles Lee or somebody else, that's who they need to go to. I don't think it's going to be a guy like Nick Nurse, though.
Also, just going from a guy who's like incredibly conservative with the way he runs the game, adjustments, all that kind of stuff, to go with Nick fucking Nurse, that would be a hell of a sea change in Milwaukee. But I'm sure we'll find out pretty soon. I think a lot of people are going to be lining up to coach Giannis and try to turn that thing around. Maybe Mo Dekeel will be their coach. That would be nice. Either way, he'll be here on the Daily Ding, and I will be too. I'm Jared Weiss. Mo's shaking his head. I guess he doesn't want Bud's job. And
they don't have enough money.
Yeah, they don't. LA Rent ain't, it is not easy. All right, let's go do it for us here. For Daniel Lehman, our producer, for Mo Dekeel, our expert analyst, and Jared Weiss, you've been watching the Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show.
Ding, ding.